It's 5:29 and 30 seconds. I know it is kind of throwing. Okay, it's now 5:30. We'll call the Magic City Council meeting to order at 5:30. Kelly, can we have a roll call, please? That comes after. Nope. Oh, never do. I saw a call and thought that was it. I will lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, and then Councilor Yoder will lead us in prayer. Now, please, everybody stand. Kelly, thank you for reminding of our priorities. God and country comes before us. Yeah. Please do roll call.
Mayor Lapine.
Present.
Councillor Townsend is excused. Councillor Siebold.
Present.
Councillor Spencer.
Present.
Perfect. Thank you. Councillor Solis.
Present.
Councillor Yoder.
Present. That's
cool. And Councillor Walker is here.
I'm here. Present.
Present. Thank you. Mayor, you have a quorum.
Thank you. Before going to public comments, Nick, would you like to introduce our new code enforcement officer?
Yes. Thank you, Mayor, Councilor. I'm happy to announce that Marco Mack, thank you for standing up, Marco. This is day on the job number two and getting going with us, and we're happy to have him. He's going to start working, of course, with all the city most of the city departments. But we're also starting to transition to enforcement on our homeless camping regulations, and he'll help us with that. So he's got a great background from California and public service there. He'll do great for us. So, Marco, thank you for your service, and we're looking forward to all your great work. Yeah, thank you.
Welcome aboard, Marco. Thank you. For public comments, I know May Houston, former commissioner, would like to address.
Good evening. My name is May Houston. I'm from Culver, and I serve on the board of the Jefferson County Faith-Based Network. From the time that we very first started the winter warming shelter, the support from the community and the county and the city and staff has been greatly appreciated. And we look forward to a very good future of continuing to serve the needy in our community with love and compassion. So thank you.
Thank you, May. Anyone else here for public comment? Anybody on Zoom for public comment? Hear none? We'll move into, I know there's some corrections already or amendments to the regular agenda. I will add for item number 7, appointment to the South Madras Concept Area Refinement Plan Public Advisory Committee.
And there's one additional item that came across my desk today is a request from the VFW for a $500 donation for their annual Welcome to Home to All Veterans lunch that is scheduled for Saturday, March 30th.
Okay, that will be line item 8. Is there any other additions or amendments to the agenda? Can I entertain a motion?
I move that we accept the agenda as amended with the two changes as noted by Mayor Lapine.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It's unanimous. Thank you. On to the consent agenda.
I move that we accept the consent agenda.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda. Any further discussion?
I do have one question on item 4, the bank signature card updates.
Were you not already listed as a signer on the bank?
I must be, because I've been signing checks.
Is it listed as a chain?
I believe so. I'm trying to pull it up.
It was my understanding, Councilor Solis, that First Interstate sent back the entire signature system again, and that's why it was listed there.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? I've been giving that little delay there for you, Patricia, to say something. So, okay, that's unanimous. Thank you. On to public hearing, the City Manager's Comprehensive Plan and Map Amendments for the Adjustment of Madras Urban Growth Boundary to remove and add 40 acres, plus or minus. At 5:35, I'll open the public hearing. Is there anyone declares has any, make it, anybody here need to make a declaration of conflict of interest? None? Okay, now for a staff report, is this you, Jeff?
No.
No, it's you, Nick.
No, I'll take it. This evening, our staff report, I'll start it. I believe Beth Goodman from Eco Northwest, the city's contractor, will be helping us. Kelly, is Beth online?
Yes, Beth is online.
Great, thank you. So what I'll do is I'll generally provide an overview, and then Beth will go into a short presentation with some more specifics on the legal requirements of this urban growth boundary change and how we went about making findings of compliance. First before you is a proposal to amend our urban growth boundary by plus or minus actually 42 acres. And we say plus or minus because it's subject to survey, okay? This is a legislative hearing, so it's a policy-based decision, but you still need findings of fact to demonstrate compliance with our comprehensive plan and the applicable statute and law. Prior to this evening, the Madras Planning Commission, Jefferson County Planning Commission, have both made recommendations to their elected officials, that being the City Council and the Board of Commissioners, to approve the proposal as presented. So I think that's important for you in context. Additionally, when the city amends its urban growth boundary, the City Council just doesn't make that decision. The Jefferson County Board of Commissioners also have to make that same decision. In other words, the City Council can't approve it and then the Board of Commissioners deny it or approve something different than the City Council. So we have to have come to the same decision on the proposed change. And the Board of Commissioners will be hearing this proposal after this evening. So they are the last decision-making body on that. In general, we are proposing this urban growth boundary amendment because really the way the configuration of the boundary on the east side of Madras near the Yarrow development is really irregular. And I think the question from the chair of the Jefferson County Planning Commission of how did we ever establish this boundary was really a good question in the sense of how we arrived in the actual configuration of the boundary. And my response to that was, I don't know that I have any factual information. First of all, the decision was made before I came to the city, but I do know in context that in approximately 2005, the city of Madras wanted to address its housing problems. And at that point in time, the opinion was that we had sufficient affordable housing, but we didn't have an adequate supply of market rate housing or higher end housing. And so the city went out and sought a developer and master planned the property. That also required land to be brought into the city limits and urban growth boundary so they could develop that land with the intended higher end housing. Well, under Oregon state law, you just can't add land to your urban growth boundary. You actually have to justify a certain amount of acreage and bring only that acreage in. So the boundary is in this form because I think, number one, the kind of arm that you'll see in the presentation a little bit later is a sloped property. And the thought was at that time, well, if it's sloped, it's going to have good views on it, right? Well, it's also really hard to develop, interestingly. So the land that we're proposing to bring in is the flatter land. And that's, I think, where there was going to be some golf course holes and some other infrastructure there. So we're looking to swap that, really, because under the Oregon statewide planning goals, the whole point is to serve our land within our urban growth boundary in an orderly and efficient manner. And the way this boundary is, it's configured today, really doesn't allow that. In order to develop that land, you'd have to do some tremendous infrastructure extensions just to get to that land that no one really would benefit. So it's not efficient, it's not orderly, and so we want to change the boundary so that we can have land developed in our community pursuant to our housing needs more effectively. So I'll pause there, and we'll transition over to Beth's presentation, and she can go through the specifics a little bit more.
Thank you very much for having me here this evening. If we could go on to the next slide. So the state law, it allows the city to remove land from its urban growth boundary and add an equivalent amount of land back into the urban growth boundary. It's colloquially called a swap or a land exchange. And Madras is looking to swap out 42 acres of land in the UGB and replace it with 42 acres of adjacent land. I'm doing a short presentation for you here this evening, but if you have questions other than this overview, I will certainly be happy to answer them. So this slide shows the area that we're proposing to remove, highlighted in the red. That area is inside the urban growth boundary. Right next to it is an area that we're proposing to add that's in the dotted line. And then there's a little sliver of area that's between the two that would remain in the UGB and simply be developed as part of the new area brought in. So the area that we're proposing to add is in your urban reserve. And the area that we're proposing to remove would be added back into your urban reserve. So we're just exchanging. So you've got 42 acres coming out of the UGB into the urban reserve, could be brought back into the UGB one day if needed, and 42 acres out of the urban reserve into the UGB. The area removed is zoned R3, and the area added would be zoned R3. So it's really swapping like for like. It'll allow for a more efficient development of the Yarrow Master Plan area, because you can see how the area proposed to be added is adjacent to Yarrow and will be connected to that area. So next slide, please. State law requires a big analysis. So we had to look at all the land around Madras within a half mile, and then some of the land around Madras within a mile. And the analysis is trying to figure out what land best meets the identified land need. And it considers all land in existing zoning, in county zoning, exceptions areas, and urban reserves. Those are the first priority land for bringing into the urban growth boundary. And so that's where we started with looking. On the next slide. That led us to look at almost the entire half eastern side of Madras. And 21 sites that we looked at, we evaluated based on the bullet points here about efficient accommodations of identified land need, orderly and economic provision of public services and facilities. I would say that that is the most important of these considerations, because that one really translates into dollars and cents for the city. Comparative environmental, energy, economic, and social consequences, and compatibility with proposed of the proposed urban uses with nearby ag and forest uses. Well, the area in particular that we're looking at is mostly in rangeland, so that there's not much in the way of conflicts there. On the next slide. We settled on this little area, subarea J, which is right next to the area that we're removing. It's the best choice because it's adjacent to the Yarrow Master Plan area, and the land that could would be removed. There's better opportunities for housing development here with fewer slopes. Both pieces of land are owned by the city of Madras, so we don't have conflict with the landowner or concerns. This area has the lowest overall cost for infrastructure and less impact on the transportation system. You're already essentially planning for the amount of housing in the area that's being removed as the area that would be added. We've got good future connections with existing neighborhoods and future neighborhoods, and there's little disruption with nearby agricultural uses. So that's how we landed on Area J. On the next slide, we evaluated Jefferson County and Madras requirements for UGB changes, and we found that the proposed land exchange meets those criteria for changes. And then we also considered Oregon statewide planning goal and identified no conflicts. So this does not pose any conflicts with the statewide planning goals. And then on my last slide is a summary of what Nick had just said, that the Madras Planning Commission recommended adoption of the proposed UGB change in their meeting in early January. The Jefferson County Planning Commission last week recommended approval of the proposed UGB change. Here we are tonight with you, and depending on what your recommendation is, your choice to adopt or not, will be in front of Jefferson County's Board of Commissioners at the end of the month for their decision. Nick, that's all I had.
Outstanding, Beth. Councilors, do you have any questions for staff before you proceed on to the public comments portion of your hearing?
Yeah, I have a question. It's kind of the same question I always ask. It's kind of generic. Are there any negative impacts, costs, consequences of this that we should be aware of that maybe aren't captured in this report or in this analysis? Any collateral damage, anything that would be a piece of information we should factor into our decision making? Or is it just this straightforward, doing the land swap, no collateral damage, no other cost to consider?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll give you my answer and you can double check with Beth. I don't think so. Okay, we have had only a few residents contact staff about this proposal. A couple were very seriously concerned about it. When I led them through it, they said, oh, that makes complete sense. So from a public perspective and property owners, I'm not seeing any opposition. I think this makes a lot of sense in terms of managing an urban growth boundary and making sure you have land in your urban growth boundary that actually can be developed at a reasonable cost. And so we're not impacting farm or forest lands. Frankly, it is that straightforward. Beth, do you share a similar opinion?
I would go further, and this is where I'll guess a little bit here, Nick. I would guess that Area J is going to be less expensive to provide services to than the area that's being removed would be to provide services to.
Awesome.
So
thank you.
Be less expensive for the city in the long run, I imagine.
Well, personally, I support this. Thank you, guys. Appreciate all the hard work. I'm assuming the Bean Foundation is probably going to like this as well.
Yes, they've requested it, and we are accommodating. And this proposal is related to several actions that the City Council has taken in the last year or so related.
I have two questions.
We have there's a spot on here for staff comments. Can we wait for that point?
Okay.
I'm sorry, Patricia. That was your counselor, not a. Go ahead, Patricia. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Two questions. We have two realtors in our council, and I would like to hear their opinion. Basically, and obviously, Nick and Beth, thanks for the presentation. My two questions is, who this Yarrow Master Plan belongs to whom, really? To the county, to us, or to any personal individual? I just want to know who really would be behind, and then who really benefits. I understand that we are growing, but I would like to know directly or indirectly who really benefits of this. And that's why I was asking the opinion of the realtors, but Nick and Beth, if you could also illustrate me with that. Thanks.
Councilor Moore, you want to respond to that first, or?
Well, I guess so. Let me kind of recap what she said is who's benefiting from this. It seems like the city of Madras would be the one that benefits for a tax base if we're going to build more houses up there or whatever we're going to be using it for, as we can sell it correctly. And I don't really see a downside to that, especially if it increases our tax base and makes a better, it's easier to upgrade the infrastructure for this lot versus the other one. So I would definitely agree with it. I don't have an issue with it at all.
And I agree with that.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay, moving on to public testimony. Is there anybody in the public that wishes to testify to this topic? Hearing none, any further staff comments?
No, I think I understood Producer Spencer wanted staff to maybe determine if we somewhat agree with Council Yoder, and we do. I would say a little bit differently that there's parties that directly and indirectly benefit from this decision. The direct benefit would be the property owner and their anyone that they would sell the land to and develop the land, because they're going to have an easier time developing the land. The indirect benefit would be to the city as a whole, as a community-wide, that we're getting land that we can actually develop at a lower cost and more likely to get the needed housing in our community, which is one of our key factors or key challenges facing our community.
And that was precisely the question, you know, within. So swapping this, that means that land already belongs to people, to owners, and they would be selling it to other people to develop. And so that swap that we're doing, it will go against whoever belonged the prior one, and now it's benefiting this one.
It's all Madras property. It's just a Madras swap.
Okay.
Yeah, we own both properties, both what's currently within the UGB and what is being proposed to move into it. So no individual homeowners benefiting from anything at this point in time.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Good question, though.
I think my only comment and question, and Nick, you and I already talked about it, is the UGB land exchange justifications and findings that is in the doc in our agenda packet here is just the draft, and once this is all finalized, just to bring this back, and it can go in just the consent agenda or something, just so we have the completed document, that would be great.
Yes, so let me explain a little bit further. So staff never knows what decision will be made. So we like to put a couple placeholders in there and highlight sections that we do need to update after the decision's been made. I think the clarification I'd like, Councillor Solis, is would you like staff to update the findings and then bring back the findings for you to formally approve, or do you want us to approve the decision and issue it and then just bring it back to you so you have the final draft? The first option is something that would likely require the hearing to be continued to a date time certain. And in that case, you may want to do that because maybe you just want to review the findings and maybe make changes to them before they're issued. The second option is, okay, the findings are generally appropriate. Go ahead and staff, if we approve this evening, issue the decision, and we'll just bring back to you that those findings for you just to be briefed on. So the question is, do you want us to continue the hearing tonight and bring back the final draft of the findings, or do you want to, should you want to approve it this evening, just move forward with finalizing and issuing the decision, but just bringing it back for your ratification?
So can you enlighten me on what's missing in the justifications and findings from Eco Northwest at this point in time? I glanced through it, and there was only a few sections where it looks like they had comments or questions for city staff for just small items to be plugged in.
Yeah.
Some historical details about why something was one way or the other.
Yes.
A date that a notice was sent to the Pioneer, which all seem like at this point we should have. So what else is missing?
It's just crossing T's and dotting I's, making sure that we've got the right dates for the hearings in there, the right dates for the notices to be issued, the right action of the respective decision-making bodies that held hearings on the matter, and then, of course, whatever decision you made on it.
So in theory, the findings could have potentially been completed before this evening? Because all the other meetings, the Planning Commission, both the city and the county, had already met. The notice had already gone to the paper. So what I'm hearing is that some of this information we already have. There's nothing in their justifications and findings report that's pending our decision.
No. Okay. That's correct.
That being said, I have no problem with this. I completely support this UGB swap, but I like having the completed documents come before us because I think that paints a complete picture and we know exactly what we're approving with the justifications and findings. So I would like to propose it being postponed so that we can have a completed document before us.
Okay, so I assume now we're in the deliberations.
Yes.
Can I ask logistically? So I definitely appreciate where my friend Councilor Solis is coming from. It sounds like nothing that's not in the document is material. It's all just as far as it's all just detail oriented. Are there any real world impacts if we do delay it as far as projects or anything? Is it academic or is there some sort of critical path that we are then delaying if we do postpone it?
I'm not aware of any deadline per se. I know the Bean Foundation has been working very hard to get their master plan ready so they can submit that to the Community Development Department and get that approved. And this land swap is contingent upon that. 2 weeks probably, I don't want to speak for them, but likely doesn't matter. Sooner than later would be useful. Also know that when we submit this, there's also a 30-day appeal period with the state of Oregon. So it somewhat delays things about 30 to 45 days.
In my opinion, I think we should move forward the approving and just let the details done by the staff and by our city executive. That would be my opinion. I think this is very thorough and that we should be advancing and not that's nothing very, really important there.
I was going to say also, I'm fine with us moving ahead on it instead of waiting. I totally get your concern, Solis, but I feel like our staff is very trustworthy, and I think it's better if we move ahead in this case just to be able to get the ball rolling, because I don't think we want to miss or lose any opportunities that might present themselves by tying something up for a couple of weeks, especially with our current situation in the economy and the needed housing and those type of issues.
Yes, I concur with that. Also, the wheels of government often move too slowly anyway, so why slow it up some more?
Yeah, I would agree with Lamar and Gary. I think I definitely get where Councilor Solis is coming from, but I think that we do have a critical need, so I want to move forward as fast as possible. So I say we just move forward with it, but we do have the final document presented, and we do review it to make sure that everything is as it should be.
Would someone like to entertain a motion?
I move that the City Council approve the proposed City of Madras Comprehensive Plan Map Amendment and Proposal to the City Council for consideration and direct staff to prepare the necessary adopting ordinance contingent upon the Jefferson County Board of Commissioners taking commensurate action on the matter.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
I just want to point out that I don't disagree with this. I don't disagree with the comments that my fellow councilors have made about trusting staff and wanting things to be able to move forward at a pace at least a little bit faster than maybe typical government goes. My concern isn't with any of the current situation or with our current time, but looking forward towards the future and wanting council to create a policy that what comes before us is in final form, not in a draft form, because even though we have some fantastic staff now, and I think our team is really solid and great, that might not always be the case 10, 15, 20 years down the road when none of us are here. So setting that precedent and that policy now, I believe, is important. For that reason, if this goes to a vote, I will be abstaining from the vote.
Well, I understand that, and I agree with that to a point, but I think the intention was to find out, without spending a lot of money on the back end, preparing some documents that we're just going to turn down. I think the intent was to find out our thoughts and the way we would vote before spending more time and effort to finish it in a final draft, and that's the only difference I see. I don't have a problem with that kind of fishing, see what the council feels like, and then completing it as long as we get to look at it again.
We did have a second. Is there any other further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed?
Abstain.
And we have one abstain, so passed by majority. Thank you. On to the next City of Madras request for annexation boundary change. Nick?
Well, this is almost identically the same proposal in the sense that this proposal for annexation or the boundary changes it's technically referred to in statute is amending the city limits boundary to coincide with the change in the urban growth boundary that you just held the public hearing on. Another way to say that is we don't want to change the urban growth boundary and not change the city limits at the same time. So that is really what the proposal is before you in terms of this annexation. You can see there in the screen, figure one, the proposed changes there. The land will be brought in and zoned R3. It's currently zoned R3, and it's proposed to remain R3. One of the kind of, I think, subtle but important points in annexation kind of policy for the city of Madras, for the last couple of years, any substantial annexation of territory into the city limits, staff and the city attorney are recommending that the city council enter into an annexation agreement for that land. And the reason for that is that it clearly establishes the obligations, expectations, and timelines of the developer, property owner, as the case may be, for developing that land. There's several cases in the city where we've brought in territory into the city limits and then we didn't have any plans for infrastructure. And either the developer has to pay that big price tag without any assistance for the city, or in some cases the city's responsible for it and we just don't have a lot of resources to do it. So when I asked the city attorney about this, I literally asked him, should we have an annexation agreement? His response, well, who would be the other party? Because it's our land. And so when this land would ultimately be transferred to the Bean Foundation, because it's in the territory of a recent agreement between the city and the Bean Foundation, the Bean Foundation or any of their heirs or successors would be responsible for bringing the infrastructure to the land when it's developed. That's also why the next step in this process after the urban growth boundary adjustment, after the annexation, is the master planning process. So they can really understand what those infrastructure requirements are and the timing of it, and of course, what level of development would be associated in those various phases, so they can make sure that the infrastructure is appropriate based on the phasing or timing of that development. So, long way of saying that staff is recommending that the annexation be approved. There's not an annexation agreement. However, there needs to be an understanding that when this land is developed, it will be the developer responsible for bringing the infrastructure to this. The city may have programs from time to time, subject to city council approval and available funding, that may be able to help that, but that's not a guarantee. So I just want to make that clear, because part of our my expectation is that the council wants to be judicious and good stewards of your public resources and making sure that we're not being or the city isn't being put in a situation where we have undue obligations for building infrastructure that maybe someone else, some other developer or someone else should have. So I disclose that in full transparency there. With that, though, staff is recommending that the proposal be approved so that it is consistent with the urban growth boundary change as well. And in both cases, you will be brought back adopting ordinances to cause effect to both of these decisions. So with that, again, might there be any quick questions before you move on to the public hearing component of the or public testimony component of the public hearing?
I just have one real quick detail-oriented question. So you said from R3 to R3. I'm assuming some sort of assessment has been done that based on what the new purpose of this, that is the optimal one. Do we even have the opportunity to rezone it, or does the swap require us to keep the same zoning? These are things that I don't know, but I'm just making sure, crossing the T, dotting the I, that we did think about it and that is the best zoning for the intended or planned use for this land swap and annexation.
So the R3 zone is one of your most permissive zones in terms of the uses that are allowed. It also happens to have the small slot size of 6,000 square feet. So when we talked with the Bean Foundation about this, we say, okay, we're going to bring it as R3. So we had that discussion about what are the allowed uses in that zone, what are the related development standards. So there's an understanding between the city and the Bean Foundation that the R3 zone was the appropriate zoning for. In other words, you could go to R2, but it would have a larger lot size. You wouldn't move it from residential to commercial.
Sure. So let me ask you this. I don't want to have you speak for the Bean Foundation. Do you think that would be their optimal zoning to do R3? Like, is this more at our behest, or is this, like, if they were designing it, do you think that they would want R3?
Yes, it provides the most flexibility for them.
Okay, so
you can do single-family detached. You can do 2, 3, 4-plexes. You can do cottage clusters. You can do townhomes. And you have the 6,000-square-foot minimum lot size, which is the smallest for our zoning.
So it'd be fair to say from like a Yarrow Bean Foundation point of view, this is the optimal design for what they intend to do.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Is there anyone in the public that would wish to give testimony on this? Any on Zoom? Any further staff comments? Okay, move on to deliberations, councilors.
I do have a question.
Mayor Lapine?
Yes.
Could you do me one small favor and back up and just double check your economic interests and make sure that there's no conflicts of interest?
Does anybody have a conflict of interest? I assume since this is tied to the other one, it would be kind of similar.
Just to be on the record.
Anybody?
Thank you.
Also, for the record, we started this at 6 p.m.
Nick, I do have a question on this one, which I will probably abstain for the same reason that I did with the last one. But my understanding with the UGB one was that it had to be a swap. And basically, what we were taking out and what we're putting in should be equal or roughly equal, and that's per specific guidelines that we have to adhere to. Is it the same thing for the city limits? Or would there be any reason why we wouldn't leave the section within city limits and just add to city limits so that if at any point this section that's being proposed to remove is developed, the city would see revenue based on the tax base?
Good question, fair question. I wouldn't recommend it. Here's why. Annexations are difficult. They're one of your most complicated land use decisions you make in terms of the staff requirements, in terms of notices and coordinating. Anytime you can bring in land share those efforts over a larger project, I always advise doing that. We have to have surveys involved. We have city attorneys involved. The other thing I would say is if the city really would like this land to be developed, it's already in your city limits, right? It's 42 acres is in your city limits to be developed to housing. If you still believe you still want 42 acres developed with housing, bringing in all in the city limits now. Give the developer the flexibility in terms of timing of development. If you only bring in, I'll say make this up, 10 acres of the 42, they develop that 10 acres, then they're going to have to go through another annexation step to develop the remaining 32 acres. I think what you're asking. And I think that would be, you could do that. It just would be adding complications to the development process.
So I'm not proposing to not bring this into the city limits. The 42 that's being proposed, I'm agreeing with that.
Yeah.
But I believe this annexation is also removing the same 42.
Yes.
We were removing from the UGB. Why are we removing that piece? Are we required to remove that piece?
You can't have your city limits beyond your urban growth boundary under Oregon state law.
Nick, if I could, when you're swapping land into the city and swapping land out of the city, you have to remove it entirely from the city limits and the UGB.
Perfect.
That's the swap. You have no choice there.
Perfect. So because it's tied to the UGB swap, we have no choice but to swap the annex, the city limits as well.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other staff comments? Moving on to deliberation. I think we already did that, moving into deliberation. So, councilors, any other discussions? Entertain a motion?
I move that the City Council approve the proposed annexation based on the findings provided and direct staff to prepare the necessary adopting ordinance contingent upon the City Council and Jefferson County Board of Commissioners approve the related urban growth boundary adjustment.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed?
Abstain.
Motion passed by majority. Thank you, Nick. Thank you, councilors. Do I need to close the hearing? Okay, thank you. to the regular agenda, the amendment for the Community Development Block Grant. Jeff.
So this amendment is tied to the Shelter Service Center. And what it is we have the three grants, the CDBG, the COIC, and the Finley funds. And one of the requirements of the CDBG was to be completed within 24 months of getting the grant. Well, while we've opened the shelter and everything, there's still minor things to continue on. And so what they've done is they've given us an extension to carry it to August to allow us to finish paving the road and things of that nature. And so that's what this amendment is. It's just to extend that contract, that grant agreement.
Anybody have any questions?
No, that's pretty straightforward.
I move that council approves amendment number 2 to the Community Development Block Grant Agreement for the Madras Homeless Shelter and Services Center.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? It's unanimous. Thank you. Airport T hangar lease, number 1.
Yes, so the city owns T hangars. They have their own. We have 3 other T hangars that are not owned by the city. They're just ground leases, but ourselves have our own. And so the units are pretty much full, and they provide monthly rent. And then we had one gentleman, Mark Garber, who was in unit number 1, wanted to vacate, and we instantly had, they're in such demand, we had Daryl, who was first on the list, waiting, going, I would like the hangar. And so this is part of one of our very first new T-hanger leases that is our template going forward. And as you can see, our rates have kind of always been on the little bit of the low end. And so in order to try to move these rates forward, what we're proposing to Daryl, and he's agreeable to it, is that we would start them off at the 225 for this next 6 months, and then come July 1, we move them up to the standard of the 250, and we would propose this for anybody who came in after July 1, they'd be at 250, and then from there on out, we would do our 3% escalation every year. And so Daryl's asked for a 5-year lease, and so before you can see the revenues that are generated from it, and then, yeah, our recommendation to just approve, and he's ready to go.
I move the council approves the airport T-hanger lease between the City of Madras and Daryl Miller.
Second.
I heard Councilor Solis first on that second. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Is there any opposed? It's unanimous. Thank you. Shelter Services Center lease and operating agreement. Jeff?
Yes. So this one, we're actually going to have a change here. We had been working diligently on it, and we had come down to the wire, in fact, yesterday when we were trying to wrap everything up, and we were struggling with an insurance piece between how it would work, because it's such a unique building, because we are dealing with a different cert type of clientele as far as taking care of liability reasons and whatnot, that what the city was working on was we had our insurance, but then FBN had to have their insurance, and we were struggling to figure out how to make this all work. And so actually yesterday it was me and Gary and Mandy, our insurance company, his insurance company, and Jeremy, we had it trying to kind of figure this out. I just didn't make it. I couldn't get it completed by the end of the day, and so his board was unable to approve it because I could not get the answer. And so what we've asked is I've prepared a simple amendment to just extend the MOU. We've since then, I believe, resolved the insurance issue. And it's not really an issue, but resolved it so we now understand how it would work and how we could set this up. And so I believe that's the final piece. And Gary and Tony could speak to this, too. But that's all that was left. But since I could not get that done, I didn't want to try to rush and finalize and push it. Since his board hadn't approved, I'd rather bring you guys one that's approved by their board to say we're all done. So we just wrote a quick, simple amendment for you guys to approve tonight to just extend it another 2 weeks, and then we'll get it wrapped up. So.
So that's not the document that we have before us, correct?
That's the one up on the screen. I literally wrote this at 4 o'clock.
Oh, perfect. Thank you.
It put it in there, and Kelly was gracious enough to upload it for me. So if we just make a motion to extend the MOU term to February 28th, that's it, and then we'll be okay.
I move that the City Council approve Amendment Number 1, an MOU with... cannot read from here.
City of Madras and Jefferson County Faith-Based Network.
Jefferson County Faith-Based Network through effective February 13th, 2024.
It's for 2 weeks?
It's
just to extend the MOU to February 28th of 2024.
Okay, extended through February 28th, 2024.
Second.
Sufficient?
Okay, we have a motion and a second by Councilor Walker. Any further discussion?
Is the Jefferson County Faith-Based Network happy with everything so far, and everything's copacetic and on the right track, or is there anything that we should be aware of, or everything's going great?
Feel free to come up.
Not to put you on the spot, I just wanted to get your take to make sure that we're doing everything to your satisfaction.
Jeff asked me the same question yesterday, and our comments were... After going through a review...
Please introduce yourself.
I'm sorry. I'm Gary Bussum, the president of the board for the Jefferson County Faith-Based Network. We are 99% there. We called a special board meeting yesterday in preparation for your meeting tonight. And Jeff hit it spot on. The issues over fire insurance, of all things... It was something that we did not have, that we recognized that there was another piece that we did not have. And so everybody worked hard yesterday, but as of the time we got done with our meeting yesterday, we had no conclusions. And basically asked Jeff to just, if we could hold, we want to do this right. And yes, we're 99% of our way there, and we're excited about moving forward with the city and serving people in the community.
Awesome. Thank you. Appreciate what you guys do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we still have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? And it's unanimous. Agreement creating land use restrictive covenants for the shelter service center. Jeff.
Yes, so this is a requirement of the COIC grant, and that once we have gotten to the end, we have to record covenants against the property that basically say, hey, we're going to operate it, and per the grant agreement, which basically say it has to stay as what we agreed it would be as a shelter for the next 10 years, and that we can't transfer the property until after such said time. They require us to just declare it and record it, and so they sent us a draft, and really the only change I had was they accidentally had Deschutes County on there, so I changed to Jefferson County because I don't want to drive down there to record it. I'd rather do it here. So I fixed that.
So I have a question for you on it. In the instance that, say, the faith-based network moves on or is unable to operate it for any reason, does that responsibility fall to the city, and do we then have to operate it in such a manner we can't just leave it vacant? We then have to take
Correct.
This on.
So part of the grant agreements is that if accepting the money that we accepted to build it, there's two of them, CDBG and COIC, that have the timing in them. CDBG is you have to run it for 5 years, and it has to be that way. And for anything less, you know, they can come back and ask us to pay back grant funds, prorated, of course, right? COIC takes it to 10 years. And so our grant agreements were never with Jefferson County Faith-Based Network. Our grant agreements are between us and COIC.
Yep.
We have not transferred that responsibility to Jefferson County Faith-Based Network. We're still holding that because that's really ours.
Right.
Their sole job is to operate. And if things go south and they need to move on, then yeah, then I got to figure out how to solve it.
Okay. Yeah. So with that, and I think that, I mean, I don't see any reason not to approve this, but I think it's just then for council and for Will, who's not here, would be to, as we move forward and with the budgeting, is to kind of, you know, plan for that rainy day scenario so that we're not blindsided if it ever happened. So better that we're kind of starting to tuck some of that away just in case. But
yeah, and one of the things in our agreements that we're working with them, and this is what I was discussing with Gary, is like, you know, if it has to go, I need 90 days. And so that's what I asked for in the agreement. I said, you got to give me 90 days so I can come up with a plan to get this moved around. And it's not anything against them. It's just I need time because wheels of government move slow.
I might add also on top of that, I think officially, absolutely, but I might ask just kind of unofficially, if the Jefferson County Faith-Based Network starts getting a feeling that they're having concern about being able to run it, 90-day official notice, but even longer, not anything codified, but just as a good faith gesture, if you guys ever get to the point where you don't think you're going to be able to run it, you're looking 6 months, a year, just please give us a heads up. We're keeping open dialogue so we can know and start factoring it into our, you know, our budget. So that would be greatly appreciated. Hopefully that doesn't happen, but maybe we can just have that level of, because we're obviously all trying to just help the community and help the population. So we got to do what we got to do that. So thank you guys.
One of the biggest things that I'm sure you know, Counselor, is the funding from COIC. I know that they're able to get operating funding through this year, but it's still kind of up in the air and what's going to happen with legislature. So that's the caveat here, is like what's going to happen. So everybody believes that in good faith people would come forward with funding, because why would you spend a bunch of money to build these things and not give people money to operate it? But you never know, right? Yeah. And so,
May I? Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Basically, how would we be informed, or what are the parameters that have been discussed as to see the success, whether of the shelter or whoever is running it? Mainly, it's just waiting sometimes, you know, for them to say, you know, we can't do it anymore. Not to put it now in here, but can we have that discussion at some time to say, okay, this is what we're going to do, whether we go and visit, we rotate, these are some parameters that we want them to inform us. I don't know if we can advance, or that idea would have a a grasp between the other counselors and from the staff.
Yeah. So to answer that question, Patricia, in the grant agreement, there's specific reporting requirements. And so I think it's quarterly that we have to report on the use, how many beds are being filled, those sorts of things. And Jefferson County Faith-Based Network, they're going to basically provide that information for us. We haven't really decided who's going to submit it, whether it's them or us. Either way, it's fine. But they're going to keep track of those things, and those are the performance metrics that's required by the grant as well, so they can see how things are going. And so that's the reason for that being there.
I'll add the Homeless Awareness Committee is also have an interest in this, and people, and Tony Mitchell and the Faith-Based Network is part of that committee, as well as the health, public health, which visits down there near daily, and the Best Cares treatment as well.
Right. And obviously, I haven't read the grant. I apologize for that or for the parameters. Can you then both of you say to me, more than the beds that have been utilized, do we have some parameters as what is the, how can you say, the conversion? You know, not that the same person is with us for 2 weeks or for a year, but that they are, you know, converting back, that they're being helped. Do we have some of those other softer parameters in there?
It's a great question. I really like that line of reasoning. I think you're onto something.
Yeah. No, I'd say we'd have to talk to see, you know, like what that would look like and maybe come back and say, hey, and I think what they're getting at is, okay, so if we had somebody who was homeless, as you guys know, how is this getting better? Like, are they getting to a point where they're getting a job? Are they getting to a point where they're getting a home? That sort of thing. Maybe it's like not a requirement, but just an update, which I believe, you know, part of the Homeless Advisory Committee, I'm pretty sure, Tony, you already kind of do that, kind of tell them, hey, here's the folks that we're serving, you know, and everything else. So, I mean, I don't see that as being unreasonable. Do you guys? Or, I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot. Sorry. I'm not trying to.
Come on up, Tony.
Tony Mitchell, Executive Director, Jefferson County Faith-Based Network. In human services, one of the things that we talk about is the plight and conditions of those that are in poverty are very complex. They cannot be reduced to a simple soundbite. That's similar when we talk about movement, forward movement, with those that are experiencing homelessness in Jefferson County. We are taking a journey as an organization that is focused for 5 years to on winter solely winter shelter to begin to expand our services to year-round, more comprehensive wraparound services. This is no attempt to dodge a critical question. However, expansion of services and its impact upon the plight and conditions of those experiencing homelessness is not a simple thing. It is definitely not something that's built in a day. There are multiple factors that have people bound, if you will, to experiencing houselessness. You know, you have individual factors that certainly as an organization we'll begin to work on. We will institute not only personal care services that create more dignity and worth, but those kind of services that can begin to do what we're now describing as to contribute to not only stability, but forward movement and movement towards self-sufficiency. But I want to emphasize this is a journey. And there are individual factors that we can work on, but honestly, some of the systemic factors, those among them being housing vacancies, affordability of housing, are not things that our organization can impact other than to advocate within the community for those things to be considered and to be a voice to do what is called as bringing institutional sensitivity. So there's again, there's individual factors that we're going to really begin to develop an organization and processes and structures and systems and practices that can impact that. But there are systemic factors that are beyond, honestly, our control. And so we will do everything that we can to work on those things. And what you will expect, I won't say that it will be exactly in 6 months or year one, but we are already talking about the type of performance measures that we'll be developing for the future. And I hope that what you'll see that once we get past launch and we start to embed more holistic work, that we'll be able to then talk to you about different performance measures, things that we'll be tracking. Our data systems as a small grassroots organization needs to grow, and we are doing research even as we speak to try to determine what are appropriate performance measures so that we can bring visibility to the city for those things. Hope that helps.
Thank you, Tony. I'd like to add to.
Thank you.
Not directly related to the shelter, but does directly to the Homeless Awareness Committee. This is the kind of stuff we've been talking about, things that the committee wants to track. And not only that, but the committee recognizes this is so much more complex. It's not, Dr. Baker and I joke, we don't joke, we kind of toy the idea that there's two basic kinds of homeless that we see here. The ones you see, which is what Tony's customers are, and then there's the ones that you don't see, and those are the people that are couch surf, they're in the car or that kind of thing. And so Dr. Baker and I often talk about what are the causes of that? Why are that situation? Are there ways that we can get resources that to change that situation so they don't become Mr. Mitchell's clients? So, and that's just one of the many things that we're talking about, and other many ways that we're watching. I mean, there's other ways that we kind of get data, like when Chief Plummer talks about the evolution of crime rates and whatnot. When we first introduced our last code enforcement officer, Dr. Baker reported that we had all of a sudden an increase of people who are going into treatment, and an increase of people searching for treatment. So that's why I'm really excited we now have another code enforcement officer. So there's a lot of different things that come into play here that we gauge our success or failures by, and that committee, that's where we're able to pull a lot of it together. So thank you, Tony.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
So we're looking for a motion.
Council, I move that council approves the agreement creating land use restrictive covenants for the Shelter Services Center.
Second.
I think Councilor Walker was on there by a hair for seconding that. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? It's unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you.
You get a break there, Jeff.
Nope.
Community projects for grants for the fiscal year 24-25. Kate.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council members. This evening, I'm bringing before you the community project grants discussion for the fiscal year 24-25. A quick overview of the grants and its process is historically it's been included in the budget hearings for the budget committee to review and approve. The application packets were due to finance each year no later than March 1st of that year, and required applicants to request funding amount, provide a program or project description, explain how success is measured, and provide a budget. This past fiscal year, the budget committee approved $145,500 in grants to 25 recipients for the fiscal year 23-24. These funds are appropriated out of Fund 207, Tourism Economic Development, also known as the TED Fund, and the funds are distributed year-to-date $84,050.86, or approximately 58% of the total appropriations. So each year, awardees must meet application requirements, including promoting economic development and annual reporting requirements. Now, when we took a closer look at this process, our first concern is whether the award process is an efficient use of the Budget Committee's time. During the budget hearings, with the budget for 23-24, the budget was $40 million, and this award was $145,500, and it took an entire evening. And the discussion and concern is whether the oversight and use of the TED funds is better suited to be reviewed by the City Council. Our second concern is the current community project grant application process and its deadlines. The Finance Department is receiving phone calls regularly regarding due dates, and it's increasingly important to identify whether the Council wants to award grants from the TED fund, identify the total award amount, the important due dates and application guidelines. And quickly, you'll see I have recommended that we modify the application process. And I don't know if the council wants to discuss any of this or hear the recommendation first. Is that okay? Okay.
So, Mayor, there's one, just to take one small step back, when we had our budget council retreat, one of the items that came up was council requested that we have a discussion about this. And the question that I heard from a couple of folks was, do we want to continue to allocate the same dollar amount for community grants? So the first question before the group is, do you want to allocate the same dollar amount so we know what to program in for the 24-25 budget? The second question then is, do you want to shift that decision body for those grants from the Budget Committee to the City Council? And then the third piece is, do you want to make this the modifications of extending the application deadline? It is staff's recommendation that Council consider what they wish to put into that bucket so that we can then notify applicants what's available. Two is, we are recommending that the decision for those grants change from the Budget Committee to the City Council, because you are the appropriating body for the city. And the third is, council staff does support the extension of the deadlines to allow folks to turn applications in, because right now we don't have any applications posted on the website.
Correct.
Because it pends back to the initial question of, do you want to allocate community grants from the TED dollars, and if so, what amount?
All right, I'll go first with my
Let's take it on at one question at a time. Take the first one.
Unfortunately, my thought process won't work that way. I need to understand the other thing to know that amount.
Let's just take it all on with the Councilor Siebold's complex mind. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying, I can't agree to a number unless I know what the purpose of that fund. For me, that just doesn't work. So, okay, here's what I would say. My two cents. So, I absolutely agree. We need to take this out of the Budget Committee and make this a council thing. I think. Personally, I agree it's asinine that we spend over half the budget meeting focusing on $145,000 and then we rush through the $40 million. It's insanity. It's madness. So I absolutely think we should do that. I think that if you wouldn't mind, so this comes out of the TED fund.
Correct.
So if you wouldn't mind, for me at least, part of the thought process, of course I'd love to be able to do this if we can, but I want to look at the opportunity cost of what else we could be doing. I know each fund has some restrictions legally, statutorily, that we can do. So if you wouldn't mind going over what exactly we're potentially not spending this on within the TED fund. And then third, I actually have some questions about last year's, if we still think we're gonna allocate all that, if they have up till the end of the cycle to do it, if any of that money isn't allocated, can we push to the next one, that kind of stuff.
Well, I could speak to the TED fund itself, Fund 207. It's titled Tourism and Economic Development Fund. The intent was for it to enhance the city's economic development, encourage tourism. Over time, since I went back to 1983 when the transient room tax began, and it's not very specific, and for what the city is receiving, and I actually have some quotes from the budget book. In just a second. where it says the funds collected pursuant to the ordinance will be distributed to the general fund, which is interesting. So all the TRT funds go to the general fund first, and then two-thirds of that is transferred into the TED fund. And so from there, the beginning fund balance this year for the TED fund was approximately $556,000. $330,000 additional dollars were transferred from TRT in the budget, and it's rounded, but out of a budget of $500,000, $330,000 is in the adopted budget for TED funds. We also have a contingency in the TED funds for $100,000 and an estimated ending fund balance of unappropriated dollars for $271,000. So, for example, of the $330,000, we've appropriated $145,000 of those TRT dollars. The TED fund itself, I haven't found a specific definition, and I haven't found the resolution creating the fund, but it is labeled economic development, which has had the full spectrum of anywhere from, you know, kids club programs to Chamber of Commerce.
Okay, now that's very helpful. So what are some of the other things we're spending in that fund, just as an example? What are some of the other line items?
Sure. So,
No worries.
My computer locked up. Just a second. On the second page, you can see a total of that. Oh, there we go. We have a total list of all of the appropriations for the just the community project grant awards. We have dollars appropriated for program items.
I mean, I guess if let's say I'm just playing devil's advocate, I'm probably more inclined to say let's continue it. But if we didn't do it, what are we going to do with this money? I mean, that's the question. Like, you know, to me, a lot of it's the opportunity cost. It sounds like there are some restrictions, obviously, to the TED account. So that would be part of my question. And the other part is, do we have any idea why it was exactly that amount? Was that just the most they could afford at the time, and then we carry forward that number? Or, you know, we could increase it dramatically, we could decrease it, like, you know, I'm just trying to figure out a method to the badness. Like we have a starting point. This is what we do, but you know, why that amount? Is there any reason in the budget why it looks like that was the amount, or how does that work?
Unfortunately, I haven't seen a pattern where the average ask is $2,000, with the outlier of the chamber for $76,500. It's really dependent on the nonprofit organization coming forward with the ask. We have as little as $250, as high as the $76,000. The $145,000 is what was just the total amount awarded. Is there room for additional funds to be appropriated? Yes. It kind of depends on what the goals of the council are.
So to answer your question, Councilor Siebold, maybe a different way, if council wishes to allocate the TRT funds to something different, mm-hmm. then that's where that conversation would start, because that would then determine where it gets split off to TED funds. Mm-hmm. So if you want to take the $560,000 and appropriate it for something different, then that's the TRT dollars. Then that would determine what we would be able to allocate into the TED, because the council sets the percentage. Yes. So of the 560, council at some point, and I'm sorry I don't have the history for this, or either does Kate, decided that we wanted to allocate 330 of it to the TED funds, two-thirds of the money coming in. You could, for 24, 25 year budget, come up with a different percentage, either higher or lower than that. Then that would determine what recommendation staff brings forward for you with respect to what that allocation could look like. So if council wishes to, you know, leave the 5,000 foot level in a sense of what this discussion is and go to something higher, we could do that. Just we wouldn't be prepared tonight to go into that depth conversation of what some of those pieces could be, because I'm looking at the police chief, because they'd always like something. So the gist of it is we want to make sure that we're meeting your needs within the community. So I guess the question I really would be great for us to know is, do you want to continue on with the community grant program? Let's start with that one.
I guess I'll say a little bit something, my opinion. Just because of the fact that it's for economic development, I would be in favor of cutting those grant funds to a certain extent and using some of it maybe for EDCO or for our police. Those are two important things that I think that we could use here in the city, and I think that it could be put to better use. I think that obviously there would be some disappointment if those grant monies are not available. Having a little bit, maybe half of it available, I don't know what that number is, but having something available for people might be one way to still give back to our community. But I think EDCO would be a good, very efficient way to help economic development if we're going to discuss anything with economic development. And Nick was the one that also said that. Nick said something about EDCO also, and I'm a big fan of EDCO, and I think they do very well here. And I think, you know, well, we already agreed to bring them in, but it's a matter of being able to fund that. Where are we going to get the funds for that? And this would be one good way to utilize our money, I think.
Do you need a dollar amount tonight from us? Because if you're looking for a dollar amount...
Looking at where this group is at right now, just knowing that you want to move forward with it, that would help us out, because what we could do is we could release the applications out and then come back to you and say, this is before the budget is approved, obviously, come back to you and say, we have applications for X dollar amount. Do you want to adjust the budget to reflect providing those grants out or not? Because who knows? These organizations may ask for more, or some organizations may not ask at all. Looking where this group is at, I don't think we need a dollar amount tonight. We just need to know if it's something you still want to do.
Okay.
May I speak? Okay. My issue that I had last year going through the process, fully agree, it was long, it shouldn't be in the budget, can be separate. But my major issue was about that this is for economic development. And I found out, one, the Chamber of Commerce is there. That should be considered in another item. And then the air show of Cascades. Also, I thought it should be in another item. Plus, the air show by now should be self-sufficient and, understanding some years to help. But by now, they should be, you know, even creating more money for themselves and be in profit. But then going back to the organizations, reading what supposedly these grants go for is for economic and tourism. And when I cataloged them, more than half were social. And obviously, when I was asking there, you know, we have always been supporting a lot of things, and, you know, wasn't the moment to cut, but I did bring the issue and say, no, this one is social, it's not economic. So I think, first of all, I do agree that we should give to the community, but for economic, and make it very clear, at least if we have two things in there, up in there, that they can, you know, circle and say, this is economic or it's more social, and make the case that it's economic. More than us justifying. And that's the issue I have. Plus, many in the community projects that are there, many should come from the chamber. We are already giving money to them. And now that we have a new CEO there and we have a new board, I think we should redirect and try to be more efficient with that. So I do want to give money to the community but I would change the ways that it's giving, plus be very specific in what we're doing. Thanks.
I agree with Patricia as far as the need for them in the application process. There needs to be an area where they can make their case as to why these funds would assist them in providing economic growth or tourism to the community, because that's kind of what this grant process is going for. So I would like to see it go with that. I think she brings up a good point that we as council need to kind of have a discussion probably at a future meeting coming up soon as to what our plans are or our intent with the chamber. So we know whether we're funding it at that 76.5, because if we're doing that, but we cut the community grants in half, then we really have almost no money to give to any other applicants, because it would all go to the chamber. So I think that conversation needs to be had at some point fairly soon. But I would support moving forward with this. I don't know if I support the dollar amount as it currently stands, but that's a later conversation. If the application deadline works for staff, that's fine. If you guys needed to bump it out even, I don't think that council's going to be at a point of actually awarding those until after the budget's finalized and adopted. So we wouldn't even be reviewing those, I would think, until June at the earliest, and then they wouldn't get their money till July. So no rush there. Yeah, that's what I got.
I would agree with the approach of Councillor Solis.
And then to answer Councillor Lamar's question, or Councillor Yoder, I'm sorry, question is the Honorable Yoder, is that we would be able to allocate resources to EDCO as well as keep the community grants going because of the amount of money that's in that fund.
I'll throw this out here. I do completely agree with Councillor Spencer and Councillor Solis. I feel like we just need a full redesign. Like, if this is supposed to be economic development / tourism, you go through the list and half of them are charities. And as Patricia is defining that as social, and I agree. Of course, you know, our hearts go out and we'd like to be as helpful as possible. But as a budget, we don't even have enough money to fund all of our priorities. And now here we are just giving money out to charities, not that they're not worthy causes, but how do we triage charities versus our own budgetary priorities? So I think we need to, unfortunately, we've created a feedback loop here where we weren't really holding to a proper set of standards or a proper vision or mission statement. So now we've created an expectation, and so there's going to be a kind of a one-time difficulty reestablishing a new order. But I think we need to do it. I like it in principle, and I'm willing to support it. But I think I really want to strongly redesign it. I don't think it makes sense for us to be giving money to charities. Some of the charities weren't even local. And in the meantime, we can't afford to, you know, fully staff our police department or whatever the case may be. Hopefully that's not the case anymore. But just an example, it's asinine. And from a typical taxpayer's point of view, it looks ridiculous. So it's like, oh, you gave money to people that are helping people down in Bend. And meanwhile, then you tell me you don't have money for this. It's insane. So I think we need to redesign it. I think the tough part is doing it, midstream, because we're right in the critical path. People want to start putting in applications, et cetera, et cetera. I also think it's critical that we don't let the amount of demands determine how much, like as far as the throughput. We don't say, oh, well, you know, this year we got 1 million, so we're going to do 1 million. Next year, you know, we got 2 million. We can't do that. We can't let the number of requests dictate how much we're willing to spend. We have to decide ourselves. I do also think that if there's certain things like the chamber and like the air show that are going to be in perpetuity, it might make sense to break those out and make those a separate thing. Then if maybe create a discretionary column and a, you know, long-term column, I think that it makes sense there to break those out, because if we're starting every single budget cycle saying, well, these ones always get money, then we're subtracting, why are we doing that on the front end? That should just be a different system, I would argue. So let's move forward. Is it possible to alter the application and make it clear that it has to be economic development? Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, I don't want to create a lot of work for staff, but I just think we need to redefine the paradigm. And then I think maybe we do a much smaller amount than we previously have done, and we focus on economic development. And then this next year, we come up with an official cap or an official amount of money we'll do every year and take out chamber and these other things. And then we move forward with that.
Council could decide that they want to allocate so much to, as you use, Councillor Siebel, social, and then so much to economic development. And then they could check a box on the application, one of those two buckets. And you're absolutely right. I mean, I used the amount that we would get in as a benchmark for you folks to gauge it. Because, like, for example, you received $210,000 worth of requests and allocated $145,000. So folks know that they're not going to get 100% going into it. But if you want to change it with respect to focus just on economic development, that would be really helpful to know that tonight, so that when staff finishes out and posts the applications, it's very clear to folks that, hey, if you're looking to fund X, it doesn't fall into that category. We would be able to define out what economic development is based upon conversations with all of you. Our fear is that we just release an application and then it sets an expectation with folks. We want to be able to manage that up front.
I agree with Will that we cannot just cut the social, you know, or us starting to make the definition. So we should we could allocate a little bit for social, the major for the economic, and that the people have to choose, you know, which box they are, and knowing how much money we have in each. And that will make it much easier for each one of us, and not feeling with our heart so terribly when we're saying, oh, it's not economic, really. So we could put a little bit. And because every time that we said, no, it's not really economic, it was always the case that indirectly through education, scholarships, or helping community, we were creating an economic there. So I like your idea.
And Councillor, I'd like to point out in the budget, the air show of the Cascades and the chamber are broken out. That's why on that spreadsheet on the second page, you'll see at the very bottom, they are broken out by those line items. But yes, they are part of they've been kind of all grouped together in the review process.
Any other discussion? Say again.
And do you guys feel, I don't know if you've really gotten clear guidance from us, we've kind of been all over the place. Maybe we should just all go down the line and say what we think. My personal opinion is that as far as charity, you know, there's an endless bottomless need. We're the poorest county or one of the two poorest counties in the state. We don't really have much money. So, you know, we don't really have a lot of money to give to charity when we're not even fully serving our taxpayers. So to me, I think it's crazy for us to be giving money out to charity and then not be able to fund all of our priorities. So I personally would cut the social completely. That's just me. Maybe I'm heartless, but I feel bad. But, you know, I think we need to focus on economic development, which is the purpose of the TED Fund to begin with. I think we need to go back to first principles of why this exists. That's what I do, but let's see what everybody else wants to do.
Councillor Walker.
I was going to say, I guess, because I am muted.
Councillor Walker. Go ahead, Councillor Walker.
So I still think we need I would say that we need to separate the two, one being the economic development and use that fund. For that, I think we probably have some funds somewhere that we could do for, the non-economic development things that we have going on. So I know that there's some money for that, but it does make it difficult when, you know, I feel like economic development is... The fund was originally intended to assist those things that would bring people to town, spend money in town, things like that. And for the other funds, which are much needed, I don't think we should forget those, but I just think they should be separate from this particular fund, which makes it much more simpler. When you kind of figure out the original intent, a lot like our herd and that kind of stuff, where we kind of got off track there for a while.
Councilor Yoder?
Bear with me. My mind is a little tired tonight. But so I put this together. Last week I received an email with a letter that had been sent out to different service providers in town because the carts were getting stolen. And the comment was made in there that maybe we should start fining these service providers because the carts were getting stolen. It's not them that's dealing with the carts, but it's somebody else taking the cart from the property and using it for other purposes. I guess my whole point in this is we're giving away money to different things that maybe not as necessary, but what's more important for economic development by what our town looks like. When people come in and we see carts spread all through town or carts under the bridge or people stealing other people's carts. How is that going to bring, or people stealing carts or stealing things from other businesses, how is that going to bring economic development to our town? It's not going to. So when we look at these numbers up here, I would be more in favor of taking some of these numbers and helping maybe deal with that issue. It costs us money to have a code enforcement person to go down and clean up Madras to help enforce the codes. Maybe we could use a little bit more of that. I'm in favor of trying to protect our funds, not just give it away. We have to get it from somewhere. The money doesn't just grow on trees. It comes from the citizens of Madras here. So instead of trying to give back to the same people that maybe paid money into us, let's try to use this money appropriately. And of course, my opinion of appropriate is different than what everybody else's is, I'm sure. But it's just my thought. I'm in favor of the council making the decisions for who gets money and who doesn't get money and how we distribute these funds. The amount, that's about us discussing it. I'm fine if it stays where it's at. I'm fine if it's turned, if it's taken away and put to EDCO or help the police or public safety or code enforcement or helping our service providers that do have issues with the cart. Maybe we can deal with that. Our chief of police was talking also about the abandoned motorhomes and travel trailers that we have to pay for to get rid of. Maybe some of these funds could go towards that instead of going to different 501c3s that are not even in our county. So that's some of the things that I think of when I look at that. And I think that's probably about all I'll say at this point.
Councillor Solis?
Okay, so I think you had three initial questions. Whether you, council wanted to remove the community grants from the budget process. Yes, highly agree. The purpose of the budget committee is to approve the appropriations and say yes or no, you can spend X dollars on community grants. It is not in their purview to get into the details of which grants we're approving or not approving. That is our job as council, and so I support that. Your second request was whether we were doing it at all. I support doing the community grants. Don't know the dollar amount as of yet. I'll leave that to you guys to determine, bring back to us at some point, whether that's at budget or not. And remind me your third.
I apologize. The formatting didn't come across. Just a second. So number one was...
It had to do with the deadline.
Yes, it was.
And so it looked like there's consensus on the fact that council wants to make that allocation. We clearly understood that. We clearly understand that we can move the date back because of the fact that we are now looking at February 13th right now. So we're okay with that piece of it. And from what I gather at this point, there's still an interest from council to do it, and we just note on the application that Kate will work with Connie and the team on is it social or is it economic development? Because our goal in talking with Kate today is that we want to come back and host a budget retreat review, bringing back to you the revenues and expenditures based upon the goals that you established. Because some of us went shopping at Tiffany's, but we had the Walmart budget to work with. So
we're going to need to come in confidence.
What? So we're going to need to align those two buckets, the revenues and the expenditure side, at that discussion. And we could, at that point, make a recommendation of the week of March 11th, whatever date you set, is we could then make a recommendation to you on that dollar amount based upon how the rest of the budget is pared out. So to answer the question, could we allocate additional resources to do things? We'll come to you with some recommendations. We'll come up with two or three recommendations to say, yes, you could keep the amount of money the same, but you're going to be giving up X. Or you could decrease the amount of money and you will gain Y. So we'll provide those recommendations for you. So I think at this point we have the direction we're looking for.
Perfect. Thank you.
Councillor Spencer, did you have more?
Yes. Again, I agree to split the money, and the reason not to cut out social right away, you always have to do it, you know, in decrements, not just 1 year yes and 1 year no. again. And that way they'll see that there's less money allocated, that it's different. They'll be competing with other charities. So my just recommendation would be we do have it this year, and probably then the next year we don't. And I will wait for the staff to make the proposal there and everything else that we have said. Thank you.
Can I just one more thing? Sorry, I think we're all pretty much on the same page. I will say, I will caution, plant a seed. I do kind of feel that that approach could be setting us up a little bit for failure in the fact that if we just bifurcate the application, social or economic, and do nothing else, then if there's a will, and I don't want to speak for everybody else, but if there's a will to actually reduce, then people will think we're doing about the same amount. They'll just click the social or economic box. They'll come, and then they will be disappointed when we allocate much less. So if our goal is to actually cut, but we don't do anything different, then we're just setting ourselves on the back end to be disappointing a lot of people. So I, you know, this is a gatekeeper situation on the front end design. If the will is to actually reduce, it might not be a bad idea, because we're just basically kicking the can, and then we're going to have a lot of people, you know, a social is going to apply, come in, and then we're going to say, sorry, zero for you, no soup for you. And they're basically going to leave and be upset and say, well, why did you even let me apply and go through this whole process? I got $5,000 last year, $8,000 last year, and now I got zero. So I just feel that we could be setting ourselves up for some back-end pain with that approach by being soft on the front end. But this is my humble opinion.
So are you saying that we should come up with a dollar amount now?
Well, here, I like Will's idea better, where he gives us different options.
Right, but I don't disagree with Councillor Siebold that if we send it out there and the anticipation, I'm guessing and assuming back to last year and previous years, but with the applications, there was probably a presentation saying, hey, we have X dollar amount for you to apply for. We don't know.
No, the application doesn't define dollars at all or explain what's available.
Okay, so when the application goes out, then there, I would say there is no concern then, because they have no idea what dollar amount we have. They may have an assumption based on last year what we could be allocating, but I don't know if that's a danger to us as city council.
I think we might disagree on that. I think from managing expectations, if everybody, you know, let's say you're, you know, one of these charities that have come and gotten money, you know, last year, the year before, and then they apply, they click the social, it's only different, social versus economic. They come in, they have every reason to think, well, last year I got $5,000. Let's see how much I get this year. Oh, we're giving you zero because we're completely redesigning it. Why did you bother giving me the application and creating that box if you had no, I don't know. I'm just saying, I think that we could have some disappointed people. I think what we need to decide is, are we actually cutting or not? And then factor that into design would be how I would approach it. I'm just seeing a future scenario play out. I mean, I guess we can just tell them that we're doing less if that's what we decide, but I don't know why we would wait to do that face-to-face at the point we're reviewing it rather than now.
You're not going to avoid disappointment if somebody gets less money. There's no way you're going to slice that pie without somebody getting disappointed.
So, Councillor Siebold, there is a way we could put a disclaimer on there, the application, that City Council hasn't determined how much you're going to allocate for these services. One of the things they are looking at is reducing the amount.
To keep it simple, why not have an economic development grant and a social grant? And I don't know. I know we can move some stuff around, and probably Kate can give us some ideas, but I don't think we should cut out that other stuff because that's needed as well. But to keep it simple, we have economic development and those grants that fall under that, and then you have your social, which those grants fall under that, and that will keep it simple for us, and then we're not misappropriating funds that aren't supposed to go into a certain area because it's not what it was appropriated for.
I like that idea. I think that's really good. And I also like your idea, Will, of putting just a disclaimer. I think between those two things, we're good, and I'm happy with it.
Well, and I'll just add, if we need to have a work session on this, maybe we should.
Well, in council, if I may, I think what you're struggling with here is the council really does, I'm sensing you want to define, perhaps on an annual basis, what economic development is. The ordinances provide you the latitude. I recall back to 2010, economic development looked very different than 2024 because we had different economic circumstances. So my suggestion for you would be, we could actually, in the next month or two, help you define what you want economic development to be so that when people apply, they are proposing projects or funding to be used in ways that's consistent with the way you're going to define economic development on an annual basis. That's this year in this budget process. And then in the fall or winter of 2024, getting ready for the next budget, maybe as part of your annual budget or annual goal setting, you also have a small component that says, okay, what do we want for economic development? And that would include, of course, Chamber, EDCO, maybe it's Air Show of the Cascades, whatever that is, and what are those sorts of areas that you want funding to go towards in your community cleanup funds? So that when you accept applications, you can identify that. They clearly understand up front what you're looking for. Then it's just really a discussion of how much money you want to allocate towards those different areas of economic development.
Okay, Will, you have enough information to go?
We do, Mayor. Thank you.
Okay. I think that horse is really dead right now.
We can keep going.
We're not going to get another horse.
It all started with the boy and the dream.
No, the horse is dead. Moving on. Planning Commission appointment, Nick.
Yes. Our chair, Melissa Irvine, her term actually expired in December, and in error, we did not request reappointment. She confirmed that she would like to be reappointed to the Planning Commission, and that is the request of the council this evening to reappoint her to another term of the Planning Commission.
I move to appoint Melissa Irvine to the Planning Commission to a term commencing on January 1, 2024 through December 31st, 2027.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
Yes. How was she before? Can someone comment on that? Was it, or we don't talk about that? There was a reason she left, or?
She didn't leave.
Her term expired.
Her term expired.
Oh, sorry. Okay, thanks.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? It's unanimous. Item number 7, South Madras Concept Area Refinement Plan Public... Sorry, I can't read my writing. Advisory Committee. Nick.
Yeah, that really long planning project. So that project is nearly wrapping up, but we still do have one public advisory committee. And let me just back up real quick. Refresh the council. We have a 20-year transportation system plan. We adopted a new one in 2017. That plan didn't have enough specificity for fairgrounds and south in our community. We call that the South Concept Area. And so we want to refine that or clarify that. And so that is this project to refine the transportation needs in the community, in the urban growth boundary, south of Fairgrounds Road. We're doing that through a public advisory committee, and we've got right now 3 city councilors that are appointed to that, some planning commissioners, and, of course, ODOT, DLCD, county, and city staff are participating on that, as well as property owners in the area. Love's Travel Center, TSNS Ford, for example, Chet Antonsen. And so that committee is reviewing interim work products, and one of the things they did at their last public advisory committee meeting is discuss the recommended alternative for the transportation improvements within that area. Councilor Solis has identified that he's not able to attend the meetings because they're during the day. He has work commitments, and so the council has the option of appointing another councilor to fill his position, or for some reason you feel it's appropriate to not reappoint him because there's one last meeting, that's certainly okay as well. again, we're going to have one more public advisory committee meeting before we go to the formal public hearings before the Planning Commission and City Council. So the idea is you're kind of front-loading some of the review by having councilors and planning commissioners involved so that when the proposal gets to the City Council, there's some level of understanding of why and how the proposal was developed.
And unfortunately, for the meeting on the 11th, I will be out of the country. So if you need to appoint someone else to take my place for that meeting, that's fine.
You know what? For the good of Madras, I'm willing to serve.
I move that the City Council appoint Mike Siebold to the South Madras Concept Area Refinement Plan Public Advisory Committee.
Second.
That's a long name.
Have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Abstain.
All righty. Good evening, Mayor and Council. Before you is a request from the Veterans of Foreign Wars, the Madras Post, for $500. They have requested a donation for their Welcome Home to All Veterans lunch that is occurring on Saturday, March 30th. I am not aware whether Council appropriated funds in years past for their luncheon. They have? Okay, yes.
Yes, last year they paid the $500. Out okay. of the TED fund.
Okay. So we're resurrecting this one, Mayor. Your horse is not
the horse.
Of course. We're exhuming. Yes. We're exhuming the horse. So, yes, there was an appropriation made last year for this. So thank you, Kate, for clarification on that. Before you is a request for that, so I'm looking for direction from Council on whether they wish to donate or pass.
I would donate. Veterans, soft spot in my heart.
Yeah, I think we already beat the horse enough, and we will have future conversations about how we're going to actually approach the TED fund. I think that's a policy decision for later. So as of right now, for tonight, go ahead and send them the $500 as requested.
Concur.
Concur, same here.
Councillor Spencer?
I agree. I would go forward.
Thank you, councillors. When they came before me, I was like, oh, yeah, of course, I'm going to do anything to support the veterans. And then I thought, ooh, there's money involved. I better get everybody else here to agree. So do you need anything else from that, Kate?
Or no, we have clear direction. So
I need a motion.
Okay. Anybody entertain a motion?
I move that the City Council approve the authorization of $500 to the Veterans of Foreign Wars for their annual luncheon in the amount of $500.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? It's unanimous. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mayor and Council.
All right. If there's nothing else, we'll go on to the round table. Start with Councillor Spencer.
I have nothing to report at the moment. Just say great work. These meetings are very fruitful, and we do advance a lot. So thanks to everybody.
Councillor Siebold.
Nothing much to report. I know I just got on a new committee. If I could possibly get an email when the dates are, because I don't know, but I'm just in faith assuming I'll be able to be there. Date singular. But if I can get an email, that would be great. I want to compliment Will and all of his hard work and a lot of his economic development he has been working on, so I'm very excited about that. I think we have some very exciting projects in the pipeline that will be transformative to our community, so I think that's awesome. And beyond that, I'm very much appreciating the budget process. I know you guys have put a lot of effort into changing it. And even if in the heat of the moment we come across it all critical, or at least I come across critical, it's coming from a place of excitement that we're actually doing it correctly, in my opinion. So I'm excited. Appreciate your hard work, Kate and Will. Love the new budget process. I also think even though we're going away from the working session meetings, I think that the budget's a different track. At least that's how I change in my mind. So any extra meetings we need to have for the budget, I'm 100% in favor of doing. I view that as a separate track. So beyond that, life is good. Happy Valentine's Day.
Councilor Solis.
I have nothing to report, but just want to thank staff. I think we're in a really good spot with our staff. I think you all are doing an excellent job. Would like to welcome Kate, your first official city council meeting. I know we had a work session, but this is your first actual council meeting, so welcome. We appreciate you being here and joining our team. I think you guys are all doing a great job, and I think that we are finally on a trek towards greatness for the city, and there is a lot of positive things going on in the city, and still yet to come even more. I'm very excited to continue 2024 and even jump into 2025 just full speed ahead. So thank you all.
Councilor Yoder.
Nothing to report, but also same thing. Thank you to all staff for your efforts. And I thank you to your wife also for helping put these little Valentine gifts together. It's much appreciated. It doesn't go unnoticed. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I knew it was his wife. Councilor Walker.
Thank you, staff. I don't have anything to report other than we almost had a urban forestry and public works meeting, but we were one person short, so that was a bummer. But anyway, appreciate everybody's work. I like to say welcome to Kate. Thank you. And of course, Lorraine, fairly new, so doing a good job. We appreciate everything everyone else is doing, and I like the direction we're heading. More clarification and being more decisive is a good thing, and I think it will move our city forward in a positive way that we can be proud of to say that we live here. Thank you, staff and counselors.
Chief.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate all the kind words and comments and support that you give to the PD. I am always sharing that with those folks, and they are taking it to heart, and they're ever appreciative of the recognition they get. One of the things I want to do is recognize some of the other department heads that helped us last night and early this morning with an event that was rapidly unfolding. It changed dynamics several different times, but we had public works out there, and they were able to close down and cordon off an area for us, making it safe for not only the people in the neighborhood, but also for the responding units that were there so they could move about in the dark without, you know, stumbling upon things. And the different disciplines that leaned into this.
Not to interrupt you, but I did actually want to compliment you. I meant to do that. I happened to be in the quarter mile radius of the shelter in place. So we got the text. Wife and I sheltered in place, and then we got the text on the back end saying it was clear. Could kind of hear the sirens because it's very close. So I did want to compliment you on the process. I think from a citizen perspective, I thought it was seamless. So you guys did a great job. Thank you.
Thank you. There's a lot of people sitting here around the table today that made that a success, and it could have ended up very much on a different level, but it didn't. So thank you for all of that. A couple things. I had help, and I do need that sometime. The weekly report that came out from Will's office, the PD took up a page and a quarter, if you had a chance to read that. I have help sometimes from the staff or the PD recalling all the things that we do, because we do a lot. And so some of those things were really important, but I just want to mark on the highlights some of the things that we're doing in meeting the council goals, and that's reaching out to our agencies, our allied agencies. We're holding ORPAT. For those of you who don't know what that is, it's Oregon Police Officers. It's the physical fitness test for them to do it. Deer Ridge has a fixed site, which means it's stationary and it's open and available for us to use. In the past, we had to rely upon DPSST to bring a trailer over from Redmond. They would have to set it up, and then when they were done, they would have to take it down. In addition to that, if we needed to send anybody on an off season, we had to send them over to Brooks, to Chemeketa Community College, and it cost them $25 a student or a person to run ORPAT. Because of this, we are going to run ORPAT tomorrow on at least 6 applicants for Madras PD. In addition to that, that invitation has been extended. Deer Ridge has been very gracious to open it up to all of the Central Oregon region for all the law enforcement agencies if they have. So that helps them instead of just having the sporadic one or two and then having to send them somewhere. We combine those resources. We can run 3 or 4 in a matter of hours and be done with it and have that part of that process done. And then on Friday, I think we have 6 candidates to interview for entry-level police officers. So that's been really kind of exciting to have that. Everybody in our office is once again rejuvenated over that. We got 2 that are coming out of the academy on March 1st. So they'll be graduating. So we'll have some of our staff over there to welcome them out. And then they start into the last, what I think it's 5 to 6 weeks of their FTEP program that they have. And we'll see how they'll do, and maybe we can get them moving on their own with Mitch to follow a couple months after that. So we're excited about that, so we're about ready to turn over some new people, so hopefully we'll have some really good candidates to move forward and to fill those spots. Just want to bring forward that the other thing is that we're hoping that in the your first meeting in March, we're going to bring to you a lease agreement for 4 new patrol cars. So hopefully that's going to happen. We've been speccing them out, been working with Will and with Jeff's folks, being able to get that done. Our people are excited about that as well. Aside from all that, there's all kinds of other things that are in the reading for you to run through. We talked about succession planning as one of the goals for each of the departments. Ryan Cathrine is going to be our new detective over there, and he's... I thought he'd been in law enforcement long enough that he knew police work, but he's got a whole bunch of detective training that he needs to go to in order to meet a whole lot of different laws that have to do with crimes against children, crimes against women, Carly's Law, some timelines that start tripping whenever those crimes happen. So he's in a big learning curve, but he's doing a great job. He took the lead last night as a lead investigator on last night's event. So under the tutelage of Sergeant Webb, they knocked out a search warrant for that house in 45 minutes. So that lets us get a drone in the air. That lets us get inside the house. So they did a really nice job. So aside from that, Will, did I miss anything that really needs to be captivated? All right, but thanks again.
Nick.
Don't have a lot to report. I was happy to introduce our new code enforcement officer. Just lots of great things happening. I think the continued theme, it's nice to have a full roster and, to use a football theme in coming off of the Super Bowl, play with all 11 players. And so, there's a lot of optimism for economic development. It'll be nice when we have that economic development person available just to have the capacity at the staff level. So I'm really excited about that. I also did want to report to the council that I'm working on speccing out a shipping container right now. We should get that probably purchased and delivered in about a month and a half to allow us to enforce our camping regulations. So that's kind of a first piece. And I want to thank Tony Mitchell for participating in that meeting today on short notice and just generally coordinating on that. So thank you. A lot of great things happening.
Kate, welcome.
Thank you. In the last 2 weeks, it's been pretty exciting having lots of kind of orientations with different businesses between banks, PERS, DA Davison, just all kinds of people doing some Zoom and Teams meetings, working with the staff, kind of getting a feel for some of our strengths and where we have some opportunities. And just kind of cross-training a little bit before, we really focus on budget. And we are wrapping up the audit, working closely with Public Works on some federal expenditures in the audit that are sampled. We really hope to have a draft of that audit in the next week, trying to push to get it done by end of February. But I have also started meeting with some of the department heads going over budget, and probably going to have a budget resolution come before the council here, hopefully in the next month, just kind of to have that in the budget proposal so we know what we're looking at, kind of three quarters of the way into the year. Just really excited, though. Having great conversations.
Jeff.
Kelly says I don't speak into the mic, so I'm trying to speak into the mic.
Can you speak up?
Is this better?
So, but she was going to bring something up for me while she's doing that. I just had a few things. Beanway Sewer, over the course of, I don't know how many years, we've been kind of doing phases of extending the sewer up near Beanway, and it's kind of been these things as somebody comes in and wants a sewer connection, we work with them and kind of cost share extension of the sewer main up there, and we just completed phase four, and so we were able to get another couple properties hooked on, so that's pretty exciting news. Our Culver Highway Sewer Project, right now we've got the line figured out on that. The property owners are on board. We're drafting the easement documents. We're wrapping up our environmental piece. And so here soon we should have our environmental done within the next month or so, have the easements done where we can get those executed, and then hopefully get through DEQ's process to have our loan in place. Oh, I'm going to hope about May. But in the meantime, we'll be advertising for construction, so it all kind of comes together, so we meet those timelines. And then up here on the board, I just wanted to show you this. I had a meeting at the COACT last week, and they were talking about ODOT STIP update. And if you're not familiar with that, ODOT does a three-year budget, but they do it several years out in advance. So this, they're talking about their next budget cycle was the 27-30 cycle. And what they're showing us here is, as you can see in their fundings and where their funding amounts are and where they're distributing, they're slowly dwindling. And that's just due to efficiency of cars, rise of gas, electric vehicles coming on board because roads are all funded by gas tax. And so just to give everybody a heads up, you know, that their funding's starting to shrink as well. And then, Kelly, if you can go to the next slide real quick. I just thought this interesting. And so what their projected outcomes of the 27-30 year, now, granted, legislature's coming, so they're going to be talking about a funding package. But right now they're only seeing, hey, we're going to be paving interstates. You know, we're going to have to load rate bridges. We're going to have to kind of stop on doing bike walk gaps and asset management. And, I mean, as far as talks of letting fog lines go on highways like Culver Highway or Madras-Prineville Highway, well, they won't stripe them to try to save some money. So just a heads up that that's what's going on in the transportation world. Then one last thing is our Public Works Department grew by 0.0018 FTE in our street department because one of our employees is a brand new daddy. He had a baby on Friday. Its name is Truett Elijah Quinn, 7 pounds, 2 ounces, healthy baby boy. So he's gone taking care of that, but he's automatically part of Public Works. That's just how it works. So, yeah.
Do we have the budget for that FTE?
Yes, because he's free.
I'm pretty sure that's outlawed. Child labor.
That's awesome. Will.
All right. Good evening, Mayor and Council. A couple of things. Next steps on the budget, we are looking at the week of March 11th to schedule a separate workshop to talk about revenues and expenditures. We're also looking for two citizens for the budget committee. So if you know of anyone, whoever he or she may be, direct them to Kate so we could come forward with recommendations for who would serve on that budget committee. The EDCO lunch was a huge success. They raised a significant amount of money for different programs. And during those discussions, I will be attending the Culver and Matolius's council meetings to ask for them to support funding for the EDCO position in Jefferson County. I'll be going with Jeff Rasmussen on that. And then second to last item is my 6 months is coming up in a couple of weeks. So I'm going to reach out to all of you with the draft of strategic goals, as well as a chance to sit down with you and check in to see how I'm doing. So I would love some feedback on that. So you see that. And then lastly, I'm going to be out the rest of the week for a medical procedure. Some think it should be a lobotomy, but it's really just some nasal surgery. But looking forward to be back on Monday.
Kelly.
Nothing to report.
Council, do we have council online?
I already said that I had nothing to report. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to say I'm excited about our team. I think way back in the Olympics when we first had our star players on the basketball team, that's what makes me think of the dream team. That's what we got going. Even at the chamber level, we have Debbie's been rocking it there at the chamber, so she's been connecting really well with the Downtown Association, which is a surprise to get that kind of communication. So just everywhere I look at, great things are happening. And so I'm going to stop there and knock on some wood so nothing else crazy happens. If nobody has anything else?
We have an executive session, and we'll have to go
do
to...
Do we adjourn and go to that, or we go to that?
We will adjourn and then go to that.
Right. So everybody here, that's council, stay for that. Everybody else can go have
well, we'll have to go to the workroom because I have to call them on a phone number.
All right. Well, then at 7:36, I'm going to adjourn.